Interested in the full-time Michigan Ross MBA program? Listen in to this interview with Sujin Kwan and Diana Economy so that you can learn what the Ross Admissions Committee is looking for. Welcome to the 271st episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result, you get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in," and not only in, but in at the best program for you. It gives me great pleasure to have on today's show Sujin Kwan, Managing Director of Full-Time MBA Admissions and Program at the University of Michigan Ross School of Business, and Diana Economy, Director of Full-Time MBA Admissions at Michigan Ross. Both are returning guests to Admissions Straight Talk, and I'm thrilled to have them back so that we can learn more about outstanding full-time MBA program at Michigan Ross. Sujin and Diana, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thanks for having us.
Delighted. Now, for those listeners who aren't that familiar with the Ross program, Sujin, why don't you start off and can you just give us an overview of it, focusing on its differentiators?
So there are three differentiators that we like to highlight. The first is that if you learn best by doing, there isn't a better place to get your MBA than Michigan Ross. Our portfolio of action-based learning opportunities is second to none. In addition to math, we have a whole portfolio of activities that students can do under the umbrella of real Ross experiences in action learning. And I can talk about that a little later.
Okay.
The second thing is go blue, go anywhere. That's our mantra for if you come here, you can go anywhere afterwards, geographically, industry-wise, career-wise. Everything is your opportunity, having the Michigan brand and the network behind you. And the third thing is, being in Ann Arbor, it gives you a unique opportunity to be part of a tight-knit community. More than 90% of our students come to Michigan from outside of Michigan and make it their home for the next 2 years. And so they don't have that pre-existing network here as they do in a lot of the large cities. So the focus of their experience is entirely on their MBA experience and their classmates, not exploring the city within.
Okay, great. Now, Ross appointed a new dean, Dean Scott DeRue, approximately 2 years ago. He believes that MBA students should experience, going back to that real theme that you just mentioned, four things while in B school. They should start, advise, lead, and invest in real-world businesses. And he proudly announced at the AGEC conference that I attended at Ross in June that Ross students in this year's entering class will perform all four functions, and you alluded to that a minute ago. When do Ross students do all that? How does that fit in? I mean, it's a lot. You got to still take accounting and finance and economics and all that other stuff. How do they fit these four functions in, which I think is fantastic, by the way?
So some of those things are what we call co-curricular experience. Some of them are through coursework like math, which I'll talk about in a second, but yeah. Some of them are parallel to the academic experience that they have. Start. So they can get seed money for startups through our Dare to Dream grant program, which is funded through our Zeldery Institute for Entrepreneurial Studies. They can also get advisory support for their startups or startup ideas through our Entrepreneurs in Residence program. And they can learn how to start a business through business development seminars. And they can do all of these things at any time during the MBA program. Advise, that's the thing that all MBA ones will do in the last quarter of their first year. And that's through what we call MAP, Multidisciplinary Action Projects. And these are anywhere around the world in any industry, startups, nonprofits and big corporations working on business challenges that these organizations have that students will help solve in the course of 7 weeks full time. So that's the advise component. Invest. Students can help manage one of our 7 student-led investment funds that total over $10 million in assets. It ranges the gamut from social venture to early seed to commercialization, real estate. So there's a real wide range of funds that students can become involved in outside of their classes with advisors who are experienced in that area. And then the new thing that the dean launched last year, LEAD, is through our Living Business Learning Experience. And this is something that students can do in their second year. And it takes place, it places students in a unit of an existing company like Shinola or Ford. And they work through the semester to lead an aspect of their business. As one example, students on the Shinola team helped launch the company's audio business last winter, right before Christmas. Mm-hmm. So that was thanks to our students. So we're really looking at opportunities to put students in real world situations with faculty guidance, but with real stakes online. And it helps them to be better prepared for what they're going to do out in the world after they graduate.
Okay. So the real aspect is the only required part of it is MAP, right? The other parts are opportunities that raw students have. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
That is absolutely correct.
And so real is basically supplementing and I think building upon MAP. Is that also correct?
That's right. It's putting an umbrella around it. And then the learning, living business learning experience is the new part of real.
Okay.
We've always had real. We put a name around it and then added the leading aspect of it.
Right. And I think also this is at least my memory is the dean kind of concretized these four functions or defined them in very specific and clearly understood ways and then basically gave direction to it. So they made sure that the students had opportunities to do all four.
That's right. Providing greater clarity around each of those,
yeah.
The start, advise, invest, lead areas.
Yeah, very clear. Okay, let's turn to the application process. Diana, I'd like to just look at the different elements in the application. And I think a lot of times the students, they fill it out, they respond to the questions, but they don't really understand that there's a purpose to each part of that application. So let's just start with the resume. What part does the resume play in the evaluation process?
Well, you started with actually my favorite part, and in fact, the piece that I look at first. So when I open up an application, the very first thing I do is go to a candidate's resume. And it's because it is a snapshot of who that candidate is, what their professional path has been, what their accomplishments are, that I can very quickly just put some context around the rest of the application that I'm going to be reading. So one of the things I think candidates do with their resume is they say, well, I've already got a resume, so I'm just going to go ahead and put the resume that I already have ready, and I don't have to worry about that. I'm just going to worry about the essays and the other parts of the application. But I do think that when you're applying to an MBA program, you have to make sure that the resume makes sense for the program that you're looking at and what you want to do next with your MBA. So you might take off certain things that are overly technical that perhaps don't relate to what you're hoping to get or do within your MBA experience, or maybe don't differentiate you, and focus a little bit more on the impact that you've had and how the organizations that you've been a part of maybe are better off as a result of you being there and the impact that you've been able to have within that organization. A couple of things that I've noticed when people, you know, put together, you know, a resume that's really strong. First of all, one page. I think candidates sometimes have longer CVs and things, but when I mentioned that we look at it fairly quickly, at least initially, it needs to stand alone in a succinct format and really being thoughtful about the real estate that you're using to demonstrate those experiences and trying to limit it to one page, I think really helps. And in fact, once people get into MBA programs, our career development office, and I'm sure others are advising that candidates have one page. So hopefully that's the way they're already trending given the experience that they have. Another thing that's important about the resume in the ROS process in particular is that it's actually the only thing that our interviewer has. So the interviewers in our instance are trained alumni and current student interviewers, and they don't have access to the rest of the application. So the resume needs to also stand alone as a talking piece that you might use when you're engaging with an interviewer in that context. So making sure that it's fully comprehensive of who you are, but really being thoughtful of what you're choosing to tell people. So another suggestion I would have as people are putting their resume together, because it is a talking piece, you might consider actually putting perhaps interests or hobbies, something that makes you maybe unique or different at the bottom of your resume, because it could be a starting point in a conversation that you have with an interviewer, whether it's something you're particularly passionate about or something that maybe doesn't fall into the traditional career context or educational experience on the resume. But if there's something interesting, I do like to see that, because I do think it starts the conversation with an interviewer and with the admissions committee.
Great point. Okay, let's move on in the application. What do you hope to learn about the applicants in the three short answer options in your essays? And maybe you want to also just describe that briefly.
So what we're really looking for is to get a better understanding of who they are and how particular experiences that they've had in their life have shaped them, how they think about things, what their values are, how they process it. So we have three groups of short answer questions. And in each group are two questions that you can choose from. So we want applicants to answer one from each of the three groups. They are questions like, I want people to know that I, and then you fill in the blank with 100 words. I made a difference when I, tell us when you made a difference. Or I was humbled when, and then they can talk about what was humbling. I was out of my comfort zone when, I was aware that I'm different when, and I find it challenging when people do X, Y, Z. So all of those are teeing up a situation that they can recall from their lives and tell us, how did that impact them? Why did they process it in that way? Why did some experience feel humbling, or why were they out of their comfort zone? It's the why piece of it that we're really hoping to get insight into. They could use any example that they want, but it's the why that differentiates applicants.
Well, sometimes the experience also will differentiate them, but their perspective on it is what you're, seems like what you're really going for.
Absolutely.
Okay. Ross's mission is to use business to create a better world. Its criteria, intellectual ability, professional and personal achievements, interpersonal communication, and teamwork skills. How do the mission and criteria shape the application and evaluation process? And I don't know. By the way, if one of you wants to add something to another question, it's fine with me. I don't know which one of you wants to start with that one. But how do the mission and the stated criteria should be pretty obvious, but how do the mission shape the evaluation process?
So alignment with our mission is one of the lenses through which we evaluate candidates, because identifying the right fit is a critical piece of what we do. And we're looking for students who want to use their special powers, their skills, their knowledge, their experience, to make a positive impact in their organizations, in their communities, and in the world. So we're looking for evidence of having done it in the past and intentions and goals to do it in the future, because it aligns with who we are. And we want students to be in the right kind of community to achieve their goals.
Yeah, one of the things I always tell applicants is schools want to know that they can help them succeed. In order to help you succeed, you have to know what success looks like, what your definition is. Exactly.
Yes.
Diana, what is the evaluation process for an application? I mean, you mentioned that you start with a resume. What happens?
Well, what happens to the application and the evaluation process is the $1 million question, I think, for candidates. They want to know what happens once I push submit. What does that look like? What are you looking for? And what can I do to put my best foot forward in the process? So we understand that, and we really want to make sure that we're giving applicants a fair shot and a holistic review. So one of the things that the first thing we do is, after it's submitted, we are looking to understand who we'd like to interview. So our interviews are by invitation only. And so the first stage in the process is a read, where we're taking a look at the candidate's overall academic profile, their essays, the recommendation letter, the resume, to get a feel for what their competitiveness is going to be against the overarching pool, because we now have an understanding of other candidates who've applied, and who we'd like to get to know a little bit further through the interview process. So in taking a look at all of those pieces, we extend interview invitations, where we try to do so in one, if not two, waves. And we're pretty communicative with candidates to say, you know, we're reviewing your application right now, and you can expect to hear back from us at this point, and that's when we're going to release interview invitations. Another sort of pro tip, I guess, for candidates is to follow Sujin's blog. It's really great. It's where we actually share a lot of, here's what we're doing now, here's what we're thinking along the process.
Sujin's blog is great. And I've recommended it many, many times, many different circumstances. Certainly, if you're applying to Ross, it's mandatory. If you're not applying to Ross, it's still a good idea. Go ahead.
Thanks, Linda.
You're welcome.
Well, we recognize that candidates, you know, they really want to know what's going on, and we want to do our best to make sure we're communicating with them, but also that we're giving the fair attention that we need to their applications. Once interview invitations are extended, candidates have the choice to either interview on campus, where they also have a chance to participate in our team exercise, which I'm happy to share more about, or off campus with an alumni interviewer. We also do some of the team exercises internationally in certain locations. So candidates that are invited to interview do a one-on-one interview. And again, if they come to campus or if they go to our international locations, they can do the team exercise. Following the results of those pieces, we actually once again revisit the applications to get a better feel for now who that candidate is. Of course, the interview gives them a chance to share more about what their story is, what makes them tick, what they're passionate about, so that we can now start to paint that picture of what they might look like when they come to Ann Arbor and contribute to our community here.
So when
and then, of course, we call and extend interview or final offers, which is a fun part of our job.
I bet. So when you're looking at the initial application, you're kind of thinking along the lines of, do I want to get to know this person more? And would we like to extend the interview invitation? After you have the interview feedback, the question really becomes much more of creating this class, creating the community, and do we want them as part of that? Am I understanding you correctly?
That's right. That's right. You know, we're looking for really, really diverse perspectives in the classroom, people who are going to contribute in different ways. And we actually have a really balanced class profile. If you take a look at it, you know, you'll see that our class profiles are typically, you know, roughly a third liberal arts, a third engineering, a third business and economics. It's not that it's constructed that way to the T, that we're really trying to get to those measures, but that also speaks to, we really want a healthy balance of people coming from different backgrounds. If you look professionally, you'll find the same thing. Mm-hmm. There's not really one professional background where you would say, gosh, you know, half of the class comes from this industry or this function. So it takes us a while to understand where people are coming from, the perspectives, both domestically and internationally, that they can bring to the classroom, and how that will help to build what we're looking for going forward. In a heavily, you know, hands-on learning environment, it requires that people are really able to, you know, to come here and to bring of themselves to the experience and to take risks and to learn together with their classmates.
Did Ross experience a drop in international applications last year?
You know, a slight drop.
Slight drop.
Okay. Yeah, slight drop.
Yeah. Well, that was very, you know, a lot of schools experienced that. That's quite clear. Yeah. Can you describe the Ross team exercise, which, by the way, I experienced in miniature back at the AGAC conference, but I'm going to let you talk about it, then I'll give my reaction to it.
Yeah, the team exercise came about a handful of years ago when we said, gosh, we're really not getting enough from the one-on-one interview when we're asking candidates questions like, you know, tell us about a time that you worked on a team and what was your role and how did you contribute to that team? What did that look like? It wasn't giving us the full picture maybe of how a candidate might contribute when they come here to a very team-oriented and team-based environment. So the team exercise puts interviewees in a team of 4 to 6 people, and their goal is to develop a 5-minute presentation about a business problem and solution for a client. We give them a set of words that they have to incorporate into the problem and solution, and then they'll also find out who their client is. It could be a bank or an international hotel chain or a whole variety of other clients. So they'll have one of those clients, and they might have words like, you know, media or merger or distribution and others to develop a business problem and solution for that client. They'll have current students and alumni evaluating their interpersonal and teamwork skills as they work together and to develop the presentation. So they don't know what their words are going to be, who their client is, or who's going to be on their team. So it's not something that candidates can do much to prepare for ahead of time, but it does help us understand how, you know, for MAP projects that Sujin talked about earlier, where you might be working with a client where you're not particularly familiar with the client, or you're working with a new team of students that you've never worked with before. That's pretty common in this environment where you're going to be going into new situations and needing to create value, and that's some of what the team exercise simulates.
And part of the reason we did it with random words that they choose from is so that no one feels the need to prepare. It's not about how much knowledge do you have about business and operations and strategy and marketing and all those things that are part of business, but rather, how do you work with other people in a new situation on an assignment when you have to figure out something quickly and be inclusive and respectful, and how you do that effectively.
As I said, we had like a mini team project at AGAC, and it was actually fun. I mean, obviously we didn't have anything at stake when we did it, but it was almost like a, you know, a party game, if you will. I don't think the applicants would view it that way, because they obviously do have something at stake. I think the key thing here, though, is to put the team's success first with the team-based exercise. Anyway, that's my advice always for team-based discussion or team-based exercise or team-based anything that is part of the evaluation process. And in terms of what what the applicants experienced, at least the extent that I experienced it, it was actually quite enjoyable. It was a fun process. So
we look at it as it's not a zero sum game. Everyone can perform well. It is stressful on the real when you're doing it for real because you're being observed, right, and the observers are taking notes about how you're interacting with others, so that it informs the admissions committee's decisions about whether you would be someone good to work on teams at Ross, because they're going to do that starting day one.
And Linda, the other piece of advice I think too is for candidates to truly be themselves. I think that people think, oh gosh, it's a team experience and they're looking for me to demonstrate what might be in their mind quintessential leadership skills of the first person to talk and the extrovert and all of those things. But you know, if that's not fundamentally who they are and the way that they engage in the team, that comes across is a little bit awkward, right? Because it's not their natural style and it's not likely who they're going to be when they show up here. So we're truly trying to get to know candidates again more holistically and really understanding how they might engage in teams. And so candidates, I think, are looking to try to add value in the way that's going to make most sense for the way that they normally interact in a team.
We're not giving points for how much does someone speak. We're not giving points for does someone come up with the best idea. It's more around how do you bring your team along? How do you get on within that team?
Yes, for sure.
And the other thing I'll say, Linda, is that almost 75 to 80% of our U.S.-based candidates chose to interview on campus. So although it is optional, it is certainly encouraged. And, where possible, we definitely would love to have people come to Ann Arbor to participate in the team exercise. I know one of the questions that candidates ask sometimes is, when is a good time for me to come visit? We have a lot of ways to get to know Ross remotely through our over 200 student ambassadors online, a lot of our webinars and events that we do. So coming to campus for the interview day is actually a really great time to come and experience what life is like here, and as well as to interview with other candidates who could potentially be future classmates.
Right. Just one footnote to the team-based exercise. They're all, team-based exercise and team-based projects are also increasingly part of the hiring process. I know both my sons, when they took positions with tech consulting firms, fairly large tech consulting firm, they both had team exercises or group interviews. And again, it was the group's success, not the individual hot dog, that stood out in a negative way that got hired.
That was another driver of our decision to incorporate this into our admissions process, because not only is teamwork important at Ross, but teamwork is important in most of the careers that our MBA grads will go into. And in developing this, we did talk with some companies to learn, how do you do it within your company? What are you looking at? How do you operationalize it? And what have you seen? So that informed a lot of how we have developed our own team exercise.
Right. Okay. Now, we talked a little bit about, when you're evaluating the application, that the first evaluation is really, the question is, do we want to get to know this person more? Do we want to interview them? What distinguishes, and I'm not talking numbers and stats now, what distinguishes those who get the interview invitation from those who don't get the interview invitation?
It really comes down to the nature and impact of their work experience, as well as their short-term career goal. What we're looking at, as Diana mentioned first, is their resume. So is it clear? Do we understand what they've accomplished, how they've contributed, and what they might do once they come into our community? And a lot of that comes out of the work experience. And then in terms of the career goals, we want to make sure that you're wanting to do something that is achievable by the degree that you're going to be getting here. And so do they have a clear idea of what they want to do, and have they told it compellingly? So if those two things align and the stats are good, that's the primary driver of getting an interview invitation.
And Linda, the other thing I would say is just it's such an academically rigorous environment here, and there's a lot of expectation in the classroom that if we invite somebody to interview, we're also trying to do so knowing that they have the academic foundation or preparedness to be able to be successful if they do well in the interview, and we admit them that they are well positioned to be successful in the environment as well.
Okay, thank you. What have you, moving away from the application process a minute, What have you observed that applicants frequently just don't understand about Ross? What would you kind of really just take them by the shoulders, grab them, shake them up a little bit and say, look, it's really like this?
I'd say two things, both related to geography. One is, as you experience, people come here and they realize this is a really great town.
Yeah.
When students who are not from here come and they graduate, they end up saying, I love this place. I can't wait to come back as an alum for recruiting, for football games, just to come visit campus. And many of them do, even from outside the U.S. They'll just come back just to be back on campus again. The other thing is about our geographic reach, where our alums go. And it's everywhere around the world. And the most highly concentrated areas are on the West Coast and the East Coast. It's not at all in Michigan. It's really not in the Midwest. The West Coast has surpassed the East, the Midwest. So Seattle, San Francisco, LA, and then on the East Coast, it's New York and DC and Boston. Those are our biggest post-MBA markets. And so I think applicants are often surprised by where people come from, how cool Ann Arbor is, and then where people go after they graduate.
And when you say it's cool, you don't mean the weather in the winter, right?
Well, at certain times of the year, it's a little bit cool, but it's a really great place to live. I've had alums say, come back to heaven anytime, in a heartbeat. You just let me know.
You know, one of the things that's great is that we're so close. And Linda, I know you were just here. We're just 20 minutes from a major international airport.
Yes, a beautiful airport, too. It's a gorgeous airport.
Beautiful. Big airport that you can get lots of places, which of course means it's very easy for recruiters to get here. And they are on campus all the time, right? Some of the major consulting firms staff people here on campus for several months in order to get to know the candidates, in order to, you know, figure out who they want to interview and move forward in the process. A lot of the tech firms, I mean, the companies that candidates want are here and visiting. And so it's really a great place to study for 2 years, but you also have incredible access to resources that you need.
Right. And I happened to have gorgeous weather when I was there. But anyways, your last comment leads directly to my next question. I couldn't have planted it better. Ross has been absolutely crushing it in terms of recruiting and career placement. 97% of grads in the 2017 graduating class had jobs within 3 months of graduation. 32.7% went to consulting. 23.6% went into tech. And I believe, if I recall correctly, that Amazon is the largest recruiter at Ross. Can you, like, to what do you attribute that, number one? And number two, can you also just touch on the lifetime, I guess it's career support and I believe access to some courses as one continues one's career. Can you touch on that?
Sure. Our placement outcomes are the result of a whole host of things. It starts with the support and infrastructure provided by our career development office. They start in the summer with one-on-one career coaching. Before students even enroll here. And then there's a 2.5-day career prep session during orientation. And then there's staff and peer coaching throughout the year. We also have small MBA2-led accountability groups based on a student's career interests. And they meet weekly to keep students on track. And students have said that has been so helpful. And then our student clubs, the professional clubs, they have intensive education and coaching sessions on the weekends. And so students are really investing a lot in getting up to speed on what they need to know for their industries, for the interviews, about the companies. And then in terms of the alumni career support, we have a career coach that is dedicated to supporting alumni. And then alumni have lifetime access to our executive education open enrollment courses, tuition free. Right. And we offer them in Ann Arbor, Hong Kong, Mumbai, and we've started offering a few online as well. Some of these courses are upwards of $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. So that's quite a break to give our alumni that for free for life.
Oh, yeah. That's a big deal. That is a big deal. What advice do you have for applicants planning to submit an application for Ross's October 1st round one deadline? And keep in mind that this show probably will air in very early August. So there'll be just about 2 months, 8 weeks from the deadline.
So I'd recommend that they connect with current students or visit campus to deepen their understanding of what Ross has to offer and what the experience is like. Because that clarity and conviction can help them make a more compelling application.
Diana?
Yeah, one of the things that's great, I mean, this connecting with people. I mean, I think, you know, schools put a lot out there for candidates, right? There's a lot on people's websites and there's a lot of events and you can get a lot of advice from a lot of people. But you really, first of all, obviously need to start with what is it that you want to get out of the experience? What are you motivated by? I usually tell candidates to, you know, what energizes you? Like when you think about your current job, you know, it might only be 5% of the time, but like, what are you really energized by? And really, really honing in on that. What's happening around you in that moment? What kinds of things are you doing? What are you working on? Why is it that you get more excited? Your blood starts going, you're really energized. And keeping that as your true north, as you think about going through this process, because I think not just for Ross, but for other schools, as you think about your professional path, there's a lot of similarities between post-MBA jobs, right? So a candidate that might say, I'm interested in a McKinsey or a Deloitte is also interested in a Google or an Amazon, and maybe for very similar reasons. And so really understanding what you're driven by and then, you know, the organizational cultures that make the most sense for you to thrive. So in learning more about Ross, one of the things that Sujin mentioned is we have over 200 student ambassadors listed on our website.
Wow.
You can filter by their backgrounds and their professional interests and the student clubs that they're a part of. And honestly, if you did nothing other than read their bios, you'd get a very good idea of who's here at Ross. But what you can do right from our website is just send them an email and say, you know, your background really resonates with me. I've done some reflection and these are the kinds of things I'm interested in. Can you tell me more about what, you know, why you chose Ross and what your experience has been like? Not just with students, but alums. And of course, our admissions team is going to be on the road quite a bit in the next month or two. We'd be happy to meet candidates.
Just a little bit, I'm sure. I think that's great advice. Would you change the advice, or what different advice would you give for somebody thinking ahead, let's say to a fall 2019 or later application?
So they'd be ahead of the game if they're starting it now. So my advice would be to cast their net wide and get to know schools early so they can invest time applying to schools that they really want to go to and not just the ones that seem to be the right schools based on rankings or my score range or whatnot. But doing that research, getting that a deeper level of insight into a school so they spend their time wisely. We hear a lot of applicants say school X was one of my top choices until I came to visit Ross and now Ross has supplanted that school. Or Ross wasn't on my list until one of my friends urged me to check it out and gosh, I wish I would have checked it out sooner. So knowing that, my advice is research a lot of schools before you narrow it down too early, because you may miss out on something that may be a better fit for you than some of the other schools on your list.
The other thing I would say, Linda, is I think if candidates are that far out, if they were to visualize sort of the next 12 months of their professional career before they even engage really in the formal application process, what do you hope to get out of that those next 12 months? What are you going to do to really demonstrate to the admissions committee in 12 to 18 months as you're applying that you are a differentiated candidate? I mean, it is a really, really competitive landscape right now. We know that. We know that's tough for candidates, and we're seeing the most competitive set of candidates we ever have and have the most compelling and competitive, I think, class coming in this fall across a whole variety of dimensions. And so if you are that far out, I think really, really being thoughtful about how you're contributing to your organization, how you're leading, how you're taking on new or challenging or differentiated experiences that in 12 to 18 months you'll be able to share with an admissions committee.
That's also great advice. I also just want to point out to the audience, I meant to bring this out earlier, is one, I think, excellent feature of the Ross site is that if you do know what you want to do after your MBA, and you should know what you want to do after your MBA, Ross has a feature on its website where you can look at different career paths and see what the Ross MBA offers you if you're interested in that specific career path. It has tons.
And Linda, that was one of your ideas many years ago.
It was one of my ideas. I thought you took it from me. I thought it was
We were thinking about it at the same time, but it was perfect timing.
All right. Okay, great. Oh, I'm pleased because I always felt like, oh, gee, I had this great idea and nobody took it. So, okay, good. That's great.
Well, there we did it.
We did it. All right. I'll give myself a pat on the back.
You're definitely a big part of that. And Linda, you know, you are right that we try to aggregate as much content as we can for people around, let's say, the 8 or 10, fairly common career paths, everything from consulting to social impact to sustainability and marketing. But, if candidates are on our website and they genuinely are saying, I'm really interested in this particular thing and I'm trying to better understand how Ross would help me, you know, get to that path, it's absolutely okay to reach out to us. So, you know, I know that candidates sometimes wonder, am I bothering them? Is it okay? When should I reach out? If you're genuinely interested, if it's a path that you've thought about and you something that's compelling for you, you know, websites are only as good as us being able to really get the accurate information out there, you know, readily as the candidates need it. And if there's something that we can help with, please don't hesitate to reach out.
Okay, sounds good. What would each of you have liked me to ask you that I didn't ask?
I would like have liked you to ask me, what questions should applicants ask of schools?
Okay, what and questions my answer- should applicants ask of schools?
A few questions. One, I would ask school people who are at that school, whether it's students or alums, do you love or did you love your experience? And if so, why? What did you love about it? Mm-hmm. And then ask every school or every student, what are the 2 to 3 highlights or greatest things about your school? What are 2 or 3 things that you love? And listen for how they talk about it and what they highlight, because there is bound to be great variability across the answers.
That's true. Do you also advise them to ask, what do you think could be improved?
Yes, that as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Diana, do you have anything that you would have liked me to ask?
You know, when candidates come up to me, you know, the one question that I love is they'll say, there is something in the water at Ross. People love their experience. This is not just a transactional experience where they're, you know, checking a box to get the MBA, to get to the next step, to just move on. You know, it's an experience where people want to come and truly engage. And why is it that people love that experience so much, I think, is what candidates are wondering, because they're sensing the energy when they talk to alums and current students. And what is it about that experience? So Jen hinted a little bit around this tight-knit community of people come here from other places. They engage in a place like Ann Arbor that is got lots of great culture and restaurants and interesting things, but it also allows for students to be able to focus on themselves, their experience without, for example, commuting. I mean, most people live within 5 or 10 minutes of the school. They might have house parties where they'll have a dinner where the dinner is called Look Who's Coming to Dinner, and you know who's hosting the party, but you don't know which other 5 other classmates are going to join you there for dinner that evening. So there's just a lot about this experience that's very intentional that the students and the administration do to help bring the community together to create an incredible experience so that people can really learn more about themselves, their classmates while they're here.
All right. Thank you very much. Sujan and Diana, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more about Ross's MBA program?
On our website. That's the best place to start.
Okay.
And Diana mentioned that we've got a listing of more than 200 student ambassadors. That's another great place to access through our website. And then we also have an online scheduling system so that candidates can come visit us on campus when classes are in session. And then some dates in the summer as well.
I will link from our show notes at accept.com/271 to the Ross full-time MBA program, to the Michigan Ross admissions blog. And also I'm on the site now. I actually don't see the ambassadors, but could you maybe, just send me the URL. I'll include that in the show notes too. Okay.
Great.
Okay. Listener, thank you too for joining Sujan Kwan, Diana Economy, and me for our 271st episode. If you found the show worthwhile, please subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any future shows, be they with admissions directors, professors, current students, test prep pros, or alumni doing great things. Thanks again for coming. This is Admissions Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.